I'm not. Dad found the blue. You chose perfectly. It's the most beautiful necklace I've ever seen. She batted away the last of her tears with the back of her hand, and I dug into my handbag for a tissue, then held it up to her nose. She blew, which solved the snot problem. Finley, we should really call your mom, or we need to head back in there, sweetheart, Mrs. Kosher said gently, glancing at me with an apologetic look. Morgan, do you want to come to tea? Finn's eyebrows popped up as she asked. Oh, my heart. If you want me to, honey, I can come in. I'll just tell the desk that I'm running late for the meeting, okay? Finley nodded exuberantly, taking my hand and her teacher's side in obvious relief. The doors swung open behind us. I'm here! Finley, baby, I'm here! Claire exclaimed, her heels clicking down the hall in an obvious rush, flying right by the sign-in desk. Ma'am, you have to sign in! I stood and turned to face her, Finley's hand still firmly tucked in mine. It took every ounce of class in my body, but I channeled my manners and schooled my features to hide my disgust. What? But, okay. Claire stopped at the desk and signed in while I tossed Finley's tissue in the trash can. Look, she's here, honey. She came. I reassured Finn, whose expressions flitted from joy to anger, and back again. Claire's gaze flickered between the three of us before settling on me as she reached us. Morgan! So lovely to see you again. What exactly are you doing at my daughter's school? I have a meeting with the superintendent at 11, I answered sweet as pie. I make it a habit to arrive early to important events. Claire arched a single eyebrow. Mrs. Montgomery, our program began 45 minutes ago, Mrs. Kosher chided. I tensed. I know, Claire answered but didn't correct her name. But I'm here now, so can we just get going? Montgomery? Nope, not today, Satan. A wave of possessiveness I had no right to feel smacked me square in the chest and erupted out my petty little mouth. Lewis, I corrected Finn's teacher. Her name is Ms. Lewis. Claire narrowed her eyes. I'd hate for your mail to get mixed up, I offered with a tiny, apologetic shrug that wasn't apologetic in the least bit. You're late, Finley erupted at Claire. I know, baby. I'm so sorry, but I had a call with my agent that just wouldn't end, and well, I'm here now. Claire nodded and smiled, sticking out her hand for Finley's. Finley looked from that hand to me. Well, let's go, Claire insisted. I can't wait to hear your poem. I invited Morgan. Finn said so quietly, it was barely a whisper. That's okay, Finn, I promised. Finley Montgomery, Claire chastised. Why on earth would you do such a thing, especially when she has an important meeting? You weren't here, Finn shouted. I'm here now. You can both come in. There's more than enough cookies, Mrs. Kosher assured us, no doubt seeing the same storm brewing that I did. Morgan? Finn looked up at me, clearly torn. Are you suggesting I share my daughter with the next-door neighbor? It's our first Mother's Day tea, Claire sniffled. I've already missed so much because I work all the time. I didn't mention the 5 Mother's Days she'd skipped out on. Finley's eyes welled up again. Of course she was scared Claire would leave. That was all she'd ever known. My posture stiffened, and I tipped Finn's chin up. Go ahead and take your mama in for tea, you silly girl. You have a poem to read. And last time I checked, it's Mother's Day, not Neighbor's Day. I tweaked her nose with a grin and let go of her hand. Her shoulders dropped in obvious relief. You're not mad? Of course not. The understudy doesn't get mad when the star shows up. We'll go shell hunting later to make up for it. Okay? She nodded enthusiastically. We'll hunt glass, but Daddy already got you the prettiest one. My fingers grazed the necklace as I smiled down at Finley. He sure did. Off you go, honey. Well, let's get inside, baby, Claire urged in a sing-song voice, taking Finley's hand. Her gaze lingered on my necklace as the teacher ushered them inside. Ms. Lewis, right this way. Later, Morgan, Finley waved as they disappeared. I held that smile like a shield, then walked back to the reception desk and sank into one of the empty chairs along the wall. Complicated. That's what I'd call my exclusive non-relationship with Jackson. And that right there had been the perfect example. What I needed right now was easy, supportive, and easy. But Jackson, what we had was intense, emotional, and messy. Claire was a tie for the biggest complication between us. I'm not with Claire. I want you. I held on to Jackson's words as my fingers toyed with my necklace. I had two choices here. Believe him or run as fast as I could. Either way, the thought of losing him to Claire sent a knife straight into my stitched-together heart. She wasn't good enough for him. She'd had his love and still hadn't chosen him when it mattered. Just like Peyton hadn't chosen Will, and yet he'd still loved her until his dying breath. He'd loved Paisley, too, even when she'd chosen Jagger. But he'd never loved me, even though I was the only one who had ever chosen him. My chest tightened. Fucking Will! Ms. Bartley, the secretary called my name. Yes, ma'am? Mr. Patterson will see you now. I'll take you to him. She rose and led me toward his office. I passed by Finley's room, but didn't look through the window. She wasn't mine. I didn't get to be jealous. So why did I feel that swirling green monster in my belly? I was in deeper than I'd wanted to admit, especially after that display I'd put on about Claire's last name. Whatever, she'd taken off his ring. She didn't get to claim his name now just because she obviously wanted him back. I wasn't giving him up without a fight. Oh, God. At what point had I decided that Jackson was mine to lose?
Chapter 15. Jackson. Because it's a school night, I said, as calmly as I could possibly manage, folding my arms across my chest. 7 p.m. on a school night, to be precise. I'd been on nights for the past 5 days, and I didn't want to spend the only night I had off this week arguing with Claire, but here we were. I wanted to spend what time I had with Morgan, especially since I hadn't seen her since I'd crawled out of her bed Saturday morning. It had almost been impossible to make myself go. So let her skip tomorrow. It's preschool, for God's sake, not Harvard. She walked past me into the living room. Absolutely not. It wasn't the first time she'd been in my house, but it still threw me to see her taking in the pictures of Finn I had scattered around. But I'm making up for lost time, Jax. It's just a sleepover. Claire sank into my couch, kicked off her shoes, and tucked her legs under her, sitting like she always did. A few years ago, that familiar sight might have stirred up long-dead feelings, but not anymore. I leaned back and shot a glance up my stairs to be sure Finley wasn't eavesdropping. It's not just a sleepover, it's a complete disruption in her schedule. Her lips pursed. She's 5. She doesn't need a schedule. She's 5, which is why she needs a schedule. Kids like boundaries and predictability, Claire. You coming home is great, but Finley can't just bounce around like a tennis ball. I came back to spend time with her, she argued. How can I do that if you won't let me? Her face fell. Who says I'm not letting you? I rubbed the skin between my eyebrows and prayed for patience. Claire had thrown everything into upheaval in the last 10 days. You just said I can't take her tonight, she snapped. First, keep your voice down. Finn doesn't need to hear any of this. Second, no, you can't just pick her up and take her when it suits you. You had her last weekend. This is my weekend, and weekends don't start on Thursday nights. I queued up a playlist on my phone and Mumford & Sons played through the speakers. Hopefully that would keep Finn's ears from hearing much. A slow smile spread across Claire's face. You still listen to this? Apparently. Her smile faded at my tone. Why aren't you happy that I'm home, Jax? Isn't this what you wanted? I blew out a breath and sat in the love seat across from her. I'm happy you're home, as long as you're actually staying. She had the nerve to look hurt. This time is different, Jax. Really? And why is that? I leaned forward, bracing my elbows on my knees. Because when Brianna called and said she thought you were really moving on, I realized that I needed to be here. Her eyes searched mine for something I couldn't give her. My stomach twisted. You're home for Finley, right? Because that's the only relationship you can improve. She drew back and blinked quickly, looking away. Shit. The hardest thing about arguing with Claire was not knowing if she was showing her real emotions or acting. Claire, tell me you're here for Finley, I repeated, softening my tone. I don't want another woman raising my child, she admitted, not meeting my eyes. Morgan, this was all about Morgan. I am in full support of you helping to raise Finley, I told her honestly. You're her mother. She brought her gaze to mine, and the vulnerability there caught me off guard. I know I'm Finley's mother. What am I to you? Shit. You're Finn's mom. That's it, Claire. I gentled the words as much as possible, but she flinched. You used to love me, she argued. Yeah, I did. But I don't anymore. I care for you deeply, and I always will, but there's no chance for us. If you're staying in Cape Hatteras, you have to accept that. Each word was clear in the hopes that my meaning was, too. But, she shook her head. This is what you wanted. Her legs slid off the couch and she leaned toward me. You told me you'd wait for me, that I could come home and we'd be a family again. You left 5 years ago. I cringed, then got a grip on my temper and my tone. Finley was two the last time I told you that. I held on to the hope that you'd come home for years, Claire, but eventually I let you go. I never let you go. My eyes flew wide and I stood. We can't do this. Not today. Not with Finn right upstairs. Jax, please. She got up and came toward me. I gave it all up for you. For us. So we could be the family you wanted. Are you seriously telling me that you don't want Finley to have her mom and dad under the same roof? Happy? In love again? That's exactly what I'd wanted. What I'd prayed for. But not anymore. You're too late. I said simply and backed away from her. There was zero chance I was getting into any position with Claire that I'd have to defend to Morgan. None. What Finley needs are a mom and dad who are happy and love her. Loving each other isn't an option anymore. You really mean that? Her face crumpled and a single tear slid down her left cheek. My jaw ticked. That was the side she cried out of for every play I'd ever seen her in. Yeah, I do. And I'm sorry if it hurts you, but you need to know the truth. Her tears dried as she studied my face. You'll change your mind. I won't. Now, if you'd like to discuss a schedule to see Finn so she knows when she'll see you, then let's do that. But this topic is closed. She took a steadying breath. Okay. Why don't we just split time? 1 week at my house, 1 week at yours. I blanched. Out of the question. I'm her mother. Claire, I can't even trust you to show up to Mother's Day tea on time, and you think I'm going to give you every other week with her? I turned and walked into the kitchen, knowing she'd follow me, which she did. Of course your little girlfriend would run and tell you that. Actually, it was your daughter who filled me in. You know that I've never been good with appointments. In fact, you used to love that I was impetuous and impulsive. Remember? She leaned against my doorway. Yeah, and I also thought futons made great beds and ramen was a food group because we were in college. I grew up because you can't be careless with a kid, Claire. I grabbed a bottle of water from the refrigerator, twisted the top, and chugged. Then I offered her one because she gave me my favorite human on the planet. No thanks. From what I remember, you used to like a beer right around now, she replied. I don't drink unless Finn is at your mom's. Because you're so responsible now? She crossed her arms. Yes, I became a parent. I never put myself in a situation where I can't take care of her. Are you ever going to stop taking digs at me? She fired back. I'm here now. Isn't that what matters? Fuck, this was exhausting. I finished the water, hoping it would cool my temper. You can have every other weekend and every other holiday. My heart screamed at the thought of not having Finn on Christmas morning, but wasn't this what adults did? Not enough. I may as well stay in L.A. and fly back twice a month for that. She brushed invisible dirt off her blouse. That's as good as you're going to get. If you want to schedule some dinners, we can make that happen too. But Finn's stability is the most important factor in all of this. Claire huffed, then stood to her full height. Fine. Then fire her nanny. I'll pick her up from school and keep her until you're off work, and I'll stay here on nights you're flying. I'm not firing Sarah. I kept my hands on the counter so I didn't rip my own hair out. You'd rather she spend time with a stranger than her mother? She fired at me. Sarah isn't a stranger, and she's proven herself way more dependable than you have. You can't have that time with Finley because I can't trust you. Don't you get that? Trust isn't something you get because you finally deigned to show up and parent. Trust is something you have to earn, and you haven't earned it, Claire. She sucked in a breath. Watch it, Jax. I might just file for full custody, and then we'll see who's begging for a little time. Every muscle in my body locked. After all, I'm home full-time now, and you're still a Coast Guard pilot, right? Not exactly a good, dependable, predictable schedule for a little girl, is it? She tilted her head. Get out. She raised an eyebrow. Just something to keep in mind, baby. There are easier ways to do this. Think about it. She walked out of the kitchen and left through the front door without saying goodbye to Finley. I calmed myself down and got Finley bathed and put to bed while she told me all about the field trip to Roanoke she was going on tomorrow. Once she was tucked in, I kissed her forehead, then put her walkie-talkie on her nightstand and told her I'd be at Morgan's place for a bit if she needed me. Switching my cell phone to our indoor cameras, I activated the zone right outside her room as I walked over to Morgan's in the dark. The sound of banging came through the front door as I knocked. Sam opened the door, but her face wasn't welcoming. Tonight is not a good night. I took a deep breath and reminded myself that Sam wasn't responsible for my shitty mood. There was another bang and the sound of cracking wood. What the hell is going on? She's trying to demo. Her lips flattened. Okay, then I can help her. Hell, breaking shit sounded great right now.
Not tonight, you can't. You look all pissy, and that's the last thing she needs.
Another bang, followed by a curse. Sam, I haven't seen her since Saturday morning. This is the only night I have off for 2 more days. Please don't stand there and tell me I can't see her because I'm in a shit mood. My jaw flexed. Sam sighed and let her head roll back in frustration before looking at me.
Okay, here's the deal. It's May 16th.
Right? Her eyes widened like I wasn't catching on.
It's May 16th, which is the day
Will died, I guessed, then cursed when she nodded.
So my girl is in there breaking some shit under the guise of it being demo, and you can't go in there all pissy. Got me?
She stared me down good for being such a little thing. I've got you. I ran a hand under my hair and tried to get my head on right.
Okay, then come in. Just watch your feet.
She led me inside and we walked through the foyer and turned the corner into the kitchen where Morgan stood with a sledgehammer wearing Will's baseball hat. She was covered in dust and breathing heavy as she surveyed the row of upper cabinets she'd brought down. Hey, I said softly. She turned quickly, clearly shocked.
Hey, I'm just,
beating the shit out of your kitchen because it's the anniversary of Will's death? I offered. Her shoulders relaxed.
Exactly.
I took in the destruction of the room. She'd gotten the easy stuff, but there was a crap load more to do. Look, I might be the last person you want to see tonight, and if that's the case, I get it. No judgment. I will head home the minute you say so. She swallowed and moved her safety glasses to the top of her head. But I'm pretty good with a hammer, and I'd be happy to help if you want me to. Morgan stilled. Or I can just sit with you while you demo, I offered. Sam glanced between us as Morgan looked anywhere but at me, making her decision.
Stay, sit, if you don't mind that I'm not myself.
I'd take her any way she came. Okay. I clipped the walkie-talkie to my belt, set the notification so my phone would vibrate if the camera detected motion, and slipped my phone into my back pocket.
In that case, Sam sang, I'm going to leave her with you so I can run to the store. We're out of ice cream. And that's not good for anyone.
Morgan nodded and Sam gave me a half smile and a mouthed good luck before she headed out the door. I grabbed one of the stools from the side of the breakfast bar and sat, keeping the bar between us to give her whatever space she needed, as much as it grinded my ass to admit she wasn't mine tonight. She was his. She pushed the demolished cabinets to the end of the kitchen, and I locked my jaw to stop from asking her to let me help. This was the same girl who hadn't wanted me to screw down the plywood on her landing. She sure as hell didn't want me stepping in here. Then she put her glasses back on, picked up the sledge, and swung it at the row of cabinets next to the space where the refrigerator had been. A quick glance showed that she'd moved it to the dining room.
"I bet you think I'm insane, right?" she asked, then swung the hammer again.
"Not at all." She looked at me over her shoulder, then swung the hammer, getting it stuck through the face of the cabinet door.
"Shit!"
"Don't move." I folded my hands on the counter as I watched her struggle to free it, then let out a breath when she did.
"You should. I feel insane half the time. Did you know that Will and I weren't even together? Not really."
She swung again and the door fell. "You said something about a quasi-boyfriend," I recalled.
"He never wanted me. Not really. I fell for him when I was in high school, and he only had eyes for Peyton."
Another swing. Wood cracked.
"And Peyton didn't want him. I never could understand that girl. Will followed her to West Point. That's how much he loved her."
Another swing. The cabinet splintered at the bottom and the sledge fell through to the counter beneath. Fuck. I wanted her in a hard hat and some sensible boots, not shorts and sneakers. "He was a West Pointer, huh?" I asked, just to keep her talking. I hated ring knockers, as did every service member I'd ever met.
"Through and through."
Her breaths were ragged as she pulled the sledge off the counter and let the business end fall to the floor.
"And when Peyton died, he found the next closest person to her to love, who happened to be her little sister, my best friend Paisley."
My eyebrows shot skyward. Holy shit. Morgan's ponytail swished as she raised the hammer and swung it through the cabinet next to the one she'd already massacred. "That had to suck." She scoffed.
"It was what it was. He didn't want me. I was too loud, too brazen, too much everything. And Paisley is the sweetest person you'll ever meet, so it's not surprising that he fell for her. Everyone does. Hell, I love her more than I love myself."
But this was the first time I was hearing her name. She put the hammer through the door again, then struggled to get it free.
"I couldn't tell her that I loved him. That would have put her through hell, and her heart couldn't take that. She had a condition back then, the same one that killed Peyton. I mean, what was the point of staying behind for college with her if I just killed her because I was too selfish to keep my mouth shut?"
She yanked the hammer free with a grunt, stumbling back a few feet. I stood, but quickly sat again when she regained her balance. She turned, leaning on the sledge as she looked at me with a mix of sadness and anger.
"And then Paisley met Jagger, and she left Will. And he was so damned hurt, and she was so damned happy. And it slipped. I never meant for her to know, but then she did."
Morgan yanked her safety glasses off.
"And of course she wasn't mad that I'd been secret in love with her ex-boyfriend, but then again, I'd loved him for far longer than she ever had."
I kept my eyes locked on hers and tried to appear as relaxed as possible.
"And Will, God, Will, I was good enough to be friends with, good enough to help him study before he got all buddy-buddy with Josh. I was good enough to pin his wings on graduation day when his mama couldn't stand straight. And by God, I was pretty enough to kiss the night he took me to the flight school graduation ball. But I wasn't enough for him to actually want."
She put her glasses on, turned around, and swung three times, bringing two cabinets completely down to the counter beneath before she turned back around. Her chest heaved.
"Heaven forbid the West Point distinguished honor grad, perfect moral by the book Will Carter actually slum it with Morgan Bartley. I guess prom queen wasn't the resume he was looking for."
Her head fell as her shoulders rose, and I stood. She gasped for a few breaths and then shot me a glare that had my ass back in the seat.
"And then he had the nerve to drive down right before he deployed and tell me that he wanted to try."
She laughed, but it wasn't happy.
"Finally, after years of loving that man, he wanted to try. But not then, of course. Heaven forbid Will act on a feeling. No, he wanted to try when he got home from that deployment. But I figured, hey, I've waited 8 years for him, so what does 9 months change?"
"Everything," I answered myself, even though I knew the end of the story. I kept waiting for her to give me the happy ending that she deserved.
"And he kissed me goodbye,"
she said softly.
"And he went. Twice. I only ever kissed him twice. He died 2 weeks later, saving Josh and Jagger's lives, And as it happened, he told Josh that Jagger had to live for Paisley.
She dropped the sledge completely.
The man I loved with my whole heart gave his life so one of the women he loved could have her husband.
Holy shit, Morgan. I'm so sorry. My fucking chest ached for her. She shrugged like it wasn't a damned tragedy.
It was noble, right? But that was Will. I've spent the last 2 years wondering why I wasn't enough to make him want to live.
I stood, unable to keep still any longer. That's on him, not on you, I said softly, more than aware that I was treading in dangerous territory.
But what does it say about me that 2 years later I'm still so fucked up about it that I have to be treated for a grief disorder? Why? Because I still think it's so fucking unfair that everyone else in our group of friends got their happy endings at the expense of mine? What kind of person thinks that? What kind of person can't talk to her best friend because all she wants to do is scream that it's not fair? That everyone acted like my heart didn't matter. I didn't matter. Paisley didn't even tell me herself, or even think about me. Ember had to tell Sam to call me. That's how I found out he was dead. And I know Paisley's husband was wounded, but a lifetime of friendship didn't afford me a moment of consideration from anyone but Sam and Grayson.
My jaw flexed as she tugged the safety glasses free and threw them on the counter.
God, how can it still hurt so much after all this time? He never even loved me. I don't even have the right to grieve him like this.
She cried, and I moved. A few seconds later, I was around the bar and in front of her, gripping her arms lightly so she'd look at me. Morgan, grief isn't a measure of how much someone loved you. It's the measure of how much you loved them. You have every right to feel however the hell you want to feel. Do you understand me? She swallowed and looked up at me from under the brim of his cap. The man who I'd never met and would never want to. How could anyone be stupid enough to turn down Morgan's love?
I don't want to feel like this anymore.
Her eyes filled with tears, and I pulled her into my arms, resting my chin on her head as she cried into my chest. I know you don't.
I want to be happy, and to have a heart that's worth risking. I miss my friends. I miss him. But then there's you, and I want to be ready for whatever this is, and it all just jumbles in my head.
Her sobs shook her shoulders. I'll wait for as long as you need me to, I promised her again. You don't have to factor me into your healing. I'm not going anywhere. She cried herself out, then stepped back and wiped her tears away with a dusty forearm that left streaks on her face. And still the woman was beautiful.
I'm sorry. I probably should have asked how your day was, she muttered.
Other than the fact that my ex threatened to sue me for custody of Finn, it's all good. I shrugged. As terrifying as the threat was, I logically knew that no judge would give her custody.
Oh God, are you serious?
Yeah, but it's okay. It won't happen. She swallowed.
Do you want a hammer? It might help to break a few things.
I grinned. Why don't you sit down over there and wait for your ice cream, and I'll demo the rest of this. She nodded slowly.
I'd really appreciate the help.
All you ever have to do is ask. Then I picked up the hammer and destroyed what was left of her kitchen, knowing whatever she rebuilt in the space would be even better. And I didn't think about the email I'd already fired off to my lawyer. I didn't think about it the rest of the night.
Chapter 16. Morgan. God, I wish I'd had the chance to take you up with me. I wish you knew the way it feels up there with the clouds. It's like you're an inconsequential human and a god all at the same time. You would love it. This is good, Dr. Searcy said, looking over my list of less than awesome memories of Will. As much as the anniversary had taken me down a notch, it hadn't thrown me backward as much as I'd prepared for. How did you feel filling it out? Guilty, I answered honestly. But lighter, once I was done. Excellent. We have a tendency to put our deceased loved ones up on a pedestal, as if we can only remember the good things about them instead of who they were as a whole person. She leaned forward and put the worksheet on the coffee table. We're past the halfway point. and I'm incredibly pleased with your progress.
Thank you. Heat rose in my cheeks.
How is it going with the truck?
My pulse kicked up.
Okay, I can open the door and stand on the running board now.
She nodded, jotting something down on her notepad.
And the anxiety attacks. I had one the first day that I stood on the running board, I admitted quietly. But Sam was there, and she talked me down. I didn't have to use my rescue meds or anything.
She smiled. Good. That's really good. And it might not feel like progress, but it is.
See? She opened my folder, flipped to a page in the back, made a mark, and then turned it around so I could see it. These are your number of attacks a week. The graph was decreasing. And this, she flipped another page, is your reported level of grief. Look, you started up here at 10, and now you're down here at 5. It means the therapy is working. That's fantastic.
I stared at the graph and nodded as a lump filled my throat. It was working. I was getting better.
So for this week, I want you to put one foot on the running board and the other foot inside the truck.
I stilled, panic rising at the thought of getting in it.
For how long? Dr. Searcy glanced at her notebook. You don't have to hold it. Just see if you can put your foot inside. Remember, this is a marathon, not a sprint. We want you to be successful, but still make progress.
Right.
Maybe I should have left that damn thing in storage instead of having the flatbed deliver it. Also, it's time to start talking about the interpersonal dynamics you're struggling with. You've mentioned Paisley in most of our sessions. Are you feeling up to opening that dialogue yet?
She watched me carefully, but there was no judgment in her tone or gaze, which was one of the reasons I liked her so much.
I was actually thinking about inviting her, everyone, really, for Memorial Day weekend. I think I might finally have the words I need to say to her. Some of them had come flying out at Jackson that night in the kitchen, and others had trickled in while I filled out that worksheet. Bottom line was that I loved my best friend, and if I didn't at least try to explain my feelings, I was going to lose her.
That's great to hear, and I know you're not quite ready for the imagined conversation with Will yet, but maybe next week?
She smiled optimistically.
Right, no.
Maybe, I answered. I do have one question, since I know we have to get to the story before I head home.
How can I help?
She asked.
Jackson.
My mouth opened and shut a few times as I struggled to find the words.
Am I using him?
How? I shifted in my seat.
I really like him,
and my feelings for him get bigger every time I see him, or talk to him, or get a text. But am I just throwing my feelings for Will at him? Am I getting better because I'm rebounding?
Her eyes softened.
Are you in love with Jackson?
I balked.
No. At least, I don't think I am. I was wild about the guy, but I wasn't going to start throwing the L word in. But I could see myself falling in love with him. In the future, that is.
That's fair.
Now tell me, do you still love Will?
Her voice softened.
My heart hurt.
It wasn't the same level of pain that it once had been, but the feelings were still there.
Yes, I whispered. It's a little softer, though. Like someone turned down the stereo in the car and now I can hear other sounds, too.
I don't think you're using Jackson. I'd be worried if you said that you were head over heels in love with him and you no longer felt anything for Will.
But everything you're feeling is actually on track. You might have bigger feelings for Jackson because you're healing and becoming capable of them, Morgan. I'm really pleased at the progress you're showing in this area.
So he's not just some kind of Band-Aid?
I fidgeted with the sea glass necklace.
Not that I can tell. And honestly, a Band-Aid wouldn't have touched you when you first came through those doors. You needed open-heart surgery.
What you feel for Jackson appears to be genuine.
But don't be surprised if a little misplaced guilt worms its way in there. Don't let it derail you or this new relationship. You're still a work in progress. Work in progress. I needed that tattooed on my freaking forehead. She reached for the tape recorder. You ready? I nodded, and she hit the record button. I'm in the grocery store, and I pick up a jar of jam. Okay, what am I doing here? I asked Jackson the next day as I stood between our cars in the parking lot outside his station. He had a devilish gleam in his eye that had me immediately suspicious. I have an idea. Do you? I folded my arms across my chest and ignored how good he looked in that flat suit. I want you to see what I do. He leaned back against his Land Cruiser and grinned. I already know what you do. Like hell was I going to watch him fly. I already had trouble sleeping on nights I knew he was on shift. Right. But I want you to see it. I know how much it weighs on you, and maybe if you... Stop. I put out my hand. You want me to what? Stand in your control tower and watch you fly the very thing that gives me nightmares? His grin vanished. Not exactly. I want you to fly with me. Blood rushed from my face, and my stomach lurched. You're kidding. Nope. I'm going to sneak you on board with my crew. And we're going to fly a quick, easy patrol. Skies are baby blue, there's not a cloud in sight, and there's zero chance of foul weather. It's the perfect day. He stared at me with an intensity that told me he was serious. You're not sneaking me on board anything, because there's zero chance in hell any of that is going to happen. I took a step toward him, shaking my finger. Big mistake. Have you ever gone up before? He gripped my hips and pulled me forward to stand between his thighs. Sure, it was a warm day, but that had nothing to do with the spike in temperature inside my own body. That was pure Jackson. No. And do not think you can charm me onto that death trap. I put my hands on his chest to hold him off, but that didn't help either. He was firm under my touch, and I knew exactly what he looked like beneath his flat suit. I pressed my thighs together and gave him my best glare. Do you trust me? He moved his sunglasses to the top of his head and hit me with those incredible eyes. Not fair, I whined, but I wasn't sure if it was over the question or his use of his secret weapon. Morgan Bartley, do you trust me? His hands flexed on my hips. With my life, I grumbled. I'm a damned good pilot. I graduated top of my class. His gaze bored into mine. Did you now? Just like Will. I pushed that thought right out of my head. Yep. And there is no chance I'm going to do anything that would ever put you at risk or put myself in a position that I can't get home to Finley. You know that. His hand rose and brushed my hair back just so the ocean breeze could whip it the other direction. That was true. He'd never jeopardize Finley's future. Give me an hour, Morgan, and you won't be as scared of what I do out there. I pulled my lower lip between my teeth and chewed lightly. Was I actually considering this insanity? Come on, Kitty. I'll give you whatever you want if you'll do this with me. I won't ask you for a single outdoor date for a month. We'll order in every night, and you can read while I rub your feet. The plea in his voice and his hopeful expression were priceless. I sighed. An hour. Maybe it was like listening to those damn tapes of me telling the story of Will's death over and over. Maybe doing this once would suck, but it would make the future easier, the future I wanted with him. I know what I want. I looked him in the eye. Anything. That grin was back, and damn if it didn't send my heart skittering. The man was too good-looking for his own good. I invited my friends down for the weekend. Okay, so it had been via text, but I'd reached out. Okay. His brows puckered. I want you to meet them. I pressed my lips in a line and held my breath.
That's it. You just want me to meet your friends.
He studied me. Yes. And before you agree, You should know that it has the potential to be the most awkward weekend of your life. His eyes widened. Those friends. I nodded. And they're not going to be easy on you. Sam is a cakewalk compared to Josh and Jagger. My fingertips traced the patches on his chest. Deal. He didn't even hesitate. You really should take a minute to think about it, I encouraged. Morgan, you just asked me for something that's within my power to give you. It's yours. I'm yours. Awkward weekend and all. Helicopter ride or not. I'm there.
He pressed a kiss to my forehead, and I melted. Oh, God, I was really fixin' to do this. Take me flyin'.
A half hour later, I was second-guessing my life choices as I stepped into the helicopter. I had on one of Sawyer's flight suits, since he was shorter than Jackson, and my feet were stuffed into boots at least four sizes too big. My hair was tucked up inside a flight helmet, and the visor was down, shielding my eyes. It didn't shield me from the scent, though. That metallic tang was exactly how Will had smelled after he'd spent a day in the cockpit.
We've got choices, Jackson said through the headset as I stared at the relatively empty space.
He pointed to the pair of seats at the rear.
You can have a more comfortable seat.
He swung his arm toward the front, where there were two smaller, far less stable-looking seats.
Or you can be closer to me.
Garrett clipped himself into one of the rear seats and patted the one next to him.
Got room right here for you, Morgan.
The seats up front were perpendicular to Jackson's. I'd even be able to touch him if I needed to.
Closer to you, I answered.
That's my girl.
He gave me a grin and got me buckled into the seat. My heart pounded to the rhythm of the rotors above us as Sawyer started the pre-flight.
Anyone see her?
Jackson asked Sawyer.
Nope. Told you it would be easy. Now you just sit back and relax, Morgan. We here at Coast Guard Air would like to welcome you aboard for today's flight.
Sawyer grinned at me as Jackson tightened the straps of my harness.
We have a quick flight plan for you today involving a short pleasure tour of the Outer Banks. Unfortunately, no snacks will be provided. Please keep your hands inside the aircraft at all times, and remember that vomiting is considered rude.
My stomach turned. I've got you, Jackson promised, cupping my cheek under my helmet. I nodded, gritting my teeth as I prepared to kiss the earth goodbye. In through my nose, out through my mouth. I spent the remainder of the pre-flight time concentrating on my breathing so I didn't let the panic win and send me running from the aircraft.
Here we go, Kitty,
Jackson said as we took off. My stomach dropped as we rose into the air, and I squeezed my eyes shut. What the hell was I doing in this thing? I had nothing to prove and everything to lose. And the vibrations through my seat were going to numb my ass at best and rattle my spine at worst. They were even stronger at my feet.
It's no fun when you can't see anything,
Sawyer teased, looking back from the cockpit. I opened my eyes and flipped him the bird. He laughed.
Your girl doesn't think this is fun. If your ex-girlfriend went down in a bird and then died in a firefight, chances are you wouldn't think this was fun either,
Jackson snapped. Sawyer's head whipped back, his eyes huge with apology.
Shit, Morgan, I didn't know. Take the controls, Jackson ordered. I have the controls,
Sawyer responded, his focus completely devoted to the aircraft. Jackson's hand reached back, and I took it.
You okay back there?
I'm okay, I lied.
The view is gorgeous if you look out the window,
he suggested, squeezing my hand. I leaned forward and gasped. The blue of the water against the sand of the beach made for a stunning contrast as we flew down the coastline, and I had to admit that he was right. The view was spectacular, entrancing, even, and something I only could have seen from the air. We flew miles down the coast, and eventually my body adjusted to the vibration and motion of the aircraft. My brain was an entirely different matter.
Coast Guard 7539er, come in.
The radio blared through my headset. Jackson's hand disappeared, and my comms went dead. Garrett nodded and his mouth moved, but I couldn't hear him. What the hell was going on? Had someone seen them sneak me on board? Was Jackson going to be in trouble? Just as I was about ready to lose my ever-loving mind, the comms came back to life.
Morgan, we have a distress call,
Jackson said, not taking my hand because he was now the one flying. We what? My voice cracked.
We have a vessel that's called in a mayday. Just a patrol,
Sawyer muttered.
There's no injuries, and we're the closest rescue team. I need you to just sit tight back there. Okay, Kitty?
Yeah, okay. My hands gripped the edges of my little seat as the aircraft changed course, pitching left. We were headed out to sea. I closed my eyes and concentrated on the rhythmic beat of the rotors and my breathing, hyper aware of my throat. My heart pounded and my stomach dipped with the turn, but there was no looming anxiety attack. Yet. This is fine. You're fine. Jackson does this every day. He's a great pilot. Top of his class, right? So is Will, my devil's advocate whispered in my ear. And Josh and Jagger, for that matter.
Morgan, you okay up there? Garrett asked. Don't worry, we're the only ones who can hear you. They switched our comms to aircraft only back here.
I'm fine, I lied. I seem to be doing a lot of that today, but my nerves didn't matter compared to what those people had to be going through.
You're faking it really well,
he assured me as he unbuckled.
ETA is 3 minutes,
Sawyer said through the headset. Garrett rose from his seat and kneeled before me.
I need you to sit right here and not move, okay? That's all you have to do. Tell me you understand.
I understand. Sit. Don't move. I nodded for emphasis. There was zero chance in hell I was moving from this seat or getting in the way of saving someone.
This is totally routine, so don't stress.
He stood and got ready to do whatever it was he did. He took 2 gray blankets from the rescue litter and set them on the seat next to me. Don't stress. Right, I whispered.
Just keep breathing for me, Kitty.
Jackson's voice was thick with worry. I'm fine. I even pitched my voice a little higher to prove it. You just fly this thing, okay? The last thing he needed to be thinking about was me.
We have a visual. ETA 1 minute, Sawyer announced.
Garrett unstrapped a wire cage from a tower directly in front of me and took it to the floor where he formed it into a rectangular basket. Then he hooked himself onto a belt that attached to the ceiling and opened the door of the helicopter. The noise level skyrocketed. The wind whipped through the fuselage and there was ocean as far as I could see. Whoever waited below us was out there all alone. And though I saw the helicopter as a death trap, I realized that for them, it was salvation.
I have a visual, Garrett said as he leaned out the freaking door. The adult male and child are clear of the landing area.
My chest tightened. There was a kid.
Do you need me back there, Harrison?
Sawyer asked.
No, sir, I've got this.
The helicopter slowed to a hover.
Prepare to drop the basket, Sawyer said.
Garrett got the thing hooked up to a wire that led outside the helicopter.
Basket ready. Deploy,
Sawyer ordered.
Deploying.
Garrett slid the basket out the door and it hung just outside the helicopter for a moment before he pushed a button, sending it down. Then my stomach lurched as the man leaned out again. Any farther and we'd be rescuing him, too.
Eyes on the basket.
We lost a little elevation, but that had to be on purpose, because no one panicked. Well, no one but me. This seat would probably need to be reupholstered after I dug my fingernails out of it. My heart raced, but still no throat issues.
Hold, sir.
Garrett's head swiveled back and forth at whatever was beneath us for a minute, maybe 2.
Prepare to take the load.
Another pause.
Taking the load.
I sucked in a breath as the hoist lifted the basket. We'd saved at least one of them.
Roger,
Sawyer replied. Garrett dropped to his belly as his head hung out of the aircraft.
Load is halfway up.
He rose to his knees and reached for the wire.
Basket is about 10 feet below the cabin. Roger. 5 feet below cabin. Bringing the basket inside the cabin. Roger.
Garrett scrambled to his feet and hauled the rescue basket back inside the helicopter with a terrified boy and his father as its occupants. My breath released in an audible rush at the realization that we'd saved them both. We'd made it in time.
Basket is inside the cabin. Roger.
He disengaged the wire and closed the door, then got the boy out first. Marcy. He was soaking wet, shaking like a leaf, and his skin was pale against the bright orange of his life vest. I grabbed one of the blankets and reached for the boy's hand. When he turned, I offered him a reassuring smile, tugged him closer, then shook the blanket once and wrapped it around him like a cape.
"Is that better?"
I asked, raising my voice so he could hear me over the beat of the rotors. He nodded, his eyes wide and pupils dilated. He clutched the blanket close, and Garrett led him to the seat he'd previously occupied. I handed the second blanket to the father, who took it with a grateful nod. The relief in his eyes was second only to shock, as Garrett got them both situated in their seats.
"We're good to go," Garrett said over the comms. "Roger."
Sawyer replied again. The helicopter pitched forward slightly, then banked left, taking us back to the coastline as Garrett took the seat next to me.
"It's a good thing we were close. That boat had another 10 minutes tops," he said through our comms.
"What sank it?" I asked.
"Not my business," he shrugged. "They're alive. That's my business. You did great, Morgan."
I scoffed. "I sat here and handed out blankets," he grinned.
"Like I said, you did great."
The father and son held hands, the son's head fallen to his dad's shoulder as we flew back to the Coast Guard station. 10 minutes. That was all that stood between that family and the ocean. 10 minutes and Jackson's crew. 10 minutes that Jackson's parents hadn't had. How many lives had he saved? How many kids still had their parents because of Jackson or Garrett or Sawyer? Had this been scary as hell?
Yes. But it was humbling. "You okay there, kitty?"
Jackson asked.
"I'm great."
I really was.
"This is going to get a little complicated. So when we land, just stick with Garrett. I have to do a post-flight. Garrett, take her to the bunk room, would you?"
"You got it,"
Garrett answered. Landin was a blur, and I did as Jackson asked and waited with Garrett. First, I stayed right behind him in the hopes that no one would notice I was there as they offloaded our evacuees. Lucky for us, we weren't the center of attention. An hour after we landed, I sat on the farthest twin bed from the door inside the bunk room, staring up at the clock. My borrowed flight suit, boots, and helmet lay on the bed next to me, ready to be returned to their owners.
"Is it supposed to take this long?" I asked Garrett.
"Trust me, it's fine. We've had heard about it by now if we'd gotten caught."
He leaned against the door, occasionally looking through the small glass window to the hallway.
"A quick, easy patrol, Morgan."
My voice dropped into a Jackson impression. Garrett laughed.
"That was his plan. Trust me."
A knock sounded at the door and he looked through the glass.
"About time," he said as he opened the door.
Jackson walked in. His flight suit unzipped just enough to reveal the t-shirt underneath.
"Thanks, man." "No problem."
Garrett gave me a two-fingered salute and walked out, closing the door behind him. Jackson locked the door, peered through the window, and then came toward me with an apologetic smile.
"So that turned out a little more adventurous than I'd hoped."
He sat down next to me, close enough that our thighs touched.
"You think?"
I tilted my head. He grimaced.
"I mean, it could have been worse."
"You could have gotten caught."
"That too."
He took my hand and laced our fingers.
"I'm really sorry. I never meant for you to get caught up in that."
God, those eyes. They made me want to swim in them. Swim in him. "I'm okay," I assured him.
"You sure?" "Because I'd planned on taking you for a pleasure flight, so you'd see just how awesome flying can be. And instead, I landed you smack in the middle of a rescue operation."
He faced forward and tensed.
"While I'm really proud of the rescue, I fear that I may have failed Operation Reassure Morgan."
The muscle at his jaw flexed,
My heart lurched. Letting go of Jackson's hand made him startle, but I flat out shocked him when I turned and slid my knee over his thigh to straddle him. I settled into his lap like I'd always belonged there and cradled the back of his head with my hands. "I'm okay," I promised, looking him in the eyes so he'd know I really was. I handed out blankets and didn't puke. "You saved two people. I call that a win." "You amaze me." He gripped my hip slightly. "But I'm guessing it didn't do much to calm your fears." I slid my hands forward a bit so I could run my thumbs over his cheeks. "Does it terrify me that you fly?" "Yes." "That didn't change, and I don't think it's ever going to."
"I don't blame you."
His face fell slightly. "Shh, I'm talking." I placed one thumb over his lips. His eyes flared and he raked his teeth over the pad of my thumb, then swiped his tongue over it. My body flooded with warmth, and it took a second to remember what I was saying. "Yes, I'm scared. But seeing what you did out there, I understand it now, too." His grip tightened.
"You do."
He looked so hopeful that I couldn't help but smile. "I do. There's a chance that family wouldn't be here if you hadn't been out there." I kissed his forehead. "I was so proud of you." He sucked in a breath, then pulled back with a smirk.
"Wait, you were proud of me?"
"I still am. Now stop fishing for compliments, Jackson Montgomery." His eyes dropped to my lips, and I barely parted mine before he kissed me. "Mercy, I love this man's mouth." The first touch of our lips was soft, but it quickly deepened. I tilted my head as his tongue met mine, and a shock of electricity raced down my spine. He tasted sweet today, like orange soda and something uniquely Jackson. As he took my mouth in strokes that varied from hard and deep to swirling and lazy, he kept me leaning in for more. And the minute I'd get it, he'd change the pace. When he pulled back, we were both breathing hard. I caught his lower lip between my teeth and tugged it gently. I wasn't ready for this to be over. He groaned, taking full control, and I gladly gave it to him. I rocked forward and he grabbed my ass, bringing our hips flush. He was hard and made no apology for it as he threaded a hand through my hair and kissed me senseless. How is it possible for a man to rob me of every single thought? I whimpered slightly when he started on my neck, his lips teasing every one of my sensitive spots like he had a freaking map. His hair was soft under my fingers, and I gripped it, seeking something, anything that might hold me to the earth while my body felt like it was gearing up for flight.
"You drive me insane. Do you know that?"
he asked with his mouth at my throat. I arched to give him better access, and he took it. God, he felt good.
"You're all I think about, all I dream about."
"Jackson," I moaned in answer. Every kiss, lick, and nip sent waves of need through my limbs that pooled deep in my belly. Desire rose so fast and strong, it felt like a dam breaking all the way in my soul, flooding me with feelings I didn't need to keep locked up anymore. He pressed kisses down the center of my chest, and when he reached the buttons of my sleeveless blouse, I popped them free. Our eyes locked and I rose slightly, tilted my hips forward and slid down the length of him.
"Fuck, kitty,"
he hissed. Then his mouth fused with mine in the kind of kiss that I had only read about. The ones that altered the universe and left you addicted. I wasn't even sure there was a universe anymore. There was only Jackson, Jackson's hands, Jackson's mouth, Jackson's body beneath mine. His hand slid inside my open shirt to cup my breast through my plain white bra. I suddenly wished I'd gone shopping or simply cared enough in the last couple of years to own more than two colors of lingerie. "Please." I leaned into his touch, and he lifted my breast from the cup, rubbing his thumb over my nipple so it hardened for him.
"Perfect,"
he murmured against my lips, then dipped his head and lifted me slightly so he could take the peek between his lips. I moaned at the sweet sensation, my fingers digging into his shoulders as I reveled in the pleasure his mouth gave me. His tongue was magic, and his teeth awakened every nerve ending with delicate scrapes. My hips rolled on instinct, seeking friction and pressure, seeking Jackson. He groaned, switching his attention to my other breast, and then he sent his free hand up the bare skin of my thigh. I rolled forward again, and he skimmed his thumb under the hem of my shorts, following the line until he dipped between my thighs. Oh, holy hell, yes. Morgan, we... A knock at the door froze us solid. Shit, Jackson muttered. My head hit his shoulder as I tried to calm my racing heart. 1 second, Jackson called, his hands already working at the buttons on my shirt. I tugged my straps to make sure the girls were put away and slid off his lap. He steadied me and searched my eyes. I'm fine, I promised. He nodded and strode for the door.
What the fuck do you want?
He snapped at whomever was on the other side of the door as he flung it open.
You're going to be late for the briefing,
Sawyer told him.
Not sure I care.
Jackson muttered a curse and shut the door in Sawyer's face. Then he closed his eyes and leaned against the door. Certain that I had everything put back where it was supposed to be, I grabbed my handbag from the bed and slung it over my shoulder.
Morgan, I'm...
Jackson started, apology filling his gaze. You owe me an entire weekend, I said before he could finish. I wasn't sorry about any of it, and I'd be damned if I let him be. His eyes flared in surprise.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Then I guess I'll see you at home. I kissed him gently. Now show me how to get out of here. He grinned, then opened the door and took me down the hallway and out to the parking lot, where he kissed me again. Guess he really didn't care about being late. When I got home, Sam sat at the dining room table, making a grocery list that included enough food to feed an army I'd invited for the weekend, an army we had to feed with the grill because I didn't exactly have a kitchen. Ember, Josh, Paisley, Jagger, they were all headed here in 3 days. Taking a helicopter ride suddenly felt like it was the easiest part of my week.
Chapter 17. Jackson. By the time I got to Morgan's on Friday, there were two cars I didn't recognize in the driveway. A bright yellow Defender and a blue Jeep Wrangler. Guess the friends were here. There were six vehicles I knew well parked along the right side of my drive, and from the sound of music coming over the dune, the guys had already set up on the beach. Sam's look of relief when she opened the front door told me all I needed to know. That bad, huh? I asked as she shut the door behind me. Not sure if bad is the word I'd use, but awkward is right up there. They're in the kitchen. We rounded the corner and found the group standing in the unfinished area. The floors had been installed last week, and now tile that looked like hardwood covered the entire floor. The cabinets were in, and Morgan's new refrigerator had been installed too, but there weren't any countertops yet. There was a redhead with a small baby bump and her arm around the waist of a guy who looked to be about my height, with brown hair and eyes, and another guy with blonde hair who was checking out the install job on the farmhouse sink. Next to him, a blonde girl stood with an equally blonde toddler on her hip, taking in the space with a smile. They were all the same people from the flight school ball photo on Will's Facebook page. Morgan stood on the other side of what used to be the bar but was now an island. So tense, she looked like she might snap. Even her smile was brittle. I wasn't sure what her friends knew about us, or if she even wanted them to know there was an us, but my apprehension fled the minute her eyes met mine. Her shoulders dropped slightly, and the relief that flooded her gaze was palpable. I crossed the floor, and when she opened her arms, I took her into mine, tucking her against my chest. Whatever we were, she wasn't hiding it from her friends. Jackson, she murmured, holding me tight. Hey, kitty. My voice was low as I pressed a kiss to the top of her head. I'm so glad you're here. Me too. I would have been earlier, but I needed to drop Finn off at Vivian's. I hated this new every other weekend arrangement, but if Claire was going to actually live here, then I had to get used to it. Man, I forgot it was her weekend. She sighed in disappointment. I wish I had, but she'll be home Monday afternoon. Morgan pulled back and tilted her face up. Well, I guess that means I have you to myself for a couple of days, huh? I grinned. Well, you have to share me with Finn's pets since I'm on feeding duty, but other than that, yes,
I find that acceptable.
The silence in the room caught my attention, and sure enough, there were four, make that five people, staring at me with blatant curiosity. The blonde guy had a little skepticism in his gaze, too.
Everyone, this is Jackson. Jackson, this is everyone.
Morgan introduced me, turning toward them but leaving her arm draped around my waist.
He's going to insist that you call him Jax.
You're the only person on the planet who calls me Jackson, I told her with a laugh. And yeah, please, call me Jax. The dark-haired guy was Josh, and his red-haired wife was Ember. The blonde guy was Jagger, and his wife was Paisley, Morgan's best friend.
And this is Peyton.
Paisley looked lovingly at her son.
Can you wave, Pay?
The boy tucked his hand into his mom's neck, but once I waved, he did too, opening and shutting his tiny fist. Had Finley really ever been that small?
So, you're the next-door neighbor,
Ember remarked with a slow smirk, glancing at Sam, who nodded. That would be me, I smiled. Pretty sure this was